Welcome to the Dinosaur George podcast, a show about paleontology and other earth sciences. Dinosaur George is a public speaker, author, and TV host with 30 years of study in paleontology. He has performed live in over 4,500 events across the US and Canada. Now, here is Dinosaur George.
Hey there, everybody. I am excited to bring you this podcast episode. Today's feature creature is going to be Mementosaurus, and we're dedicating the majority of this podcast to an interview I did with an incredibly interesting man. His name is Joe Codel, but he goes by Paleo Joe, and I've known Paleo Joe for a couple of years, and he is one of the kindest people, but this interview is so cool. If you want to go fossil hunting, and I'm talking to you young people as well, I want you to listen carefully to this podcast, because Paleo Joe can actually take you out into the field to find things, and you keep what you find. And that is crazy cool. So anyway, sit back and relax a bit. We'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about Mementosaurus, but then we're going to get right into that interview. It was exciting. So let's go.
Bring Dinosaur George's traveling exhibit to your school, museum, or city. This is the largest exhibit of its kind in North America and will turn any facility into a natural history museum. You'll see things like prehistoric mammals, giant fish, ancient reptiles, and of course, dinosaurs. It's affordable, amazing, and will be an event you'll never forget. See complete details at dinosaurgeorge.com or call us toll free, 888-487-7478. Bring Dinosaur George's traveling museum to your community today.
It's time for our feature creature segment. If you would like to suggest a creature, go to dinosaurgeorgepodcast.com and post it in the comments section of this episode, or email us your suggestions to contact@dinosaurgeorge.com. And now, our feature creature.
Today's feature creature is Mementosaurus, and if you're not familiar with this dinosaur, think about a long-necked dinosaur like Diplodocus, only grab his neck and stretch it a little bit longer, and that's what you've got in Mementosaurus. This is a dinosaur that lived about 160 to 145 million years ago, so he lived during the Jurassic period, the late Jurassic, and that's when a lot of these huge sauropods emerge, is the late Jurassic. This is an herbivore, so of course that means that he's plants, and it is quadruped, which means it walks on fours. You know, some people proposed that these animals may have been able to rear up on their hind legs to be able to reach either even higher up into the trees, but I'll talk a little bit about some new studies that may make that unlikely. This is a dinosaur that weighed over 35 tons. Man, that's huge. And it was found in Sichuan, China. Now, when you look at the dinosaur, one of the things you notice is that the neck is almost longer than the rest of the body. It's got 19. It's got 19 neck vertebrae, and they actually comprise half of the entire body length. So this is a very odd proportioned dinosaur. Some theorize because the entire neck, I don't think has ever been found, a complete neck. They theorize that the neck could have been 31 feet long. Think about that for a minute. A neck that's 31 feet. 31 feet is long for a dinosaur, but the idea that its neck may have exceeded 30 feet long is pretty spectacular. So, of course, everyone made the assumption that this animal would just raise that head way up into the trees and eat out of the tops of the trees. But there's a couple of problems with them, with that idea. One is the basic engineering to be able to raise that neck that high, you know, straight up over its body. The amount of blood pressure it would take to move blood up into that brain would be enormous. And although animals like giraffes have the ability to do it, I don't know if dinosaurs necessarily had that same neck design that a giraffe has that allows it to pump blood up into that brain without needing some ridiculously high blood pressure. So some other people proposed that maybe this dinosaur did not hold its head up more than maybe 20 degrees above its horizontal body, above its hips. And so instead of reaching way up into the very tops of the trees, they think this thing was more like a giant lawnmower that just kind of moved its head from side to side, eating every single bit of vegetation at head's height, you know, that was at the height of its head, and then move that neck from side to side, just clearing off everything and then taking a couple of steps forward and continuing to do that. Now, that wouldn't take a lot of energy, so it wouldn't mean they're burning a lot of calories to do that. That way, they wouldn't have to, you know, you wouldn't have to worry about the blood pressure getting blood up to the brain. That's not an issue anymore. And it eliminates the amount of pressure that it would place on the front legs if you were to raise that head up. So Mementosaurus remains an oddity because of that incredibly long neck. And I believe there have been some other species found that have sort of that same similar details, you know, that incredibly extra long neck with what appears to be a short rear end. But I love Mementosaurus, and if you've never heard of this dinosaur, I hope that you'll do a little research and look him up, because he is a very unique and unusual dinosaur. All right, when we come back, we're going to hear that interview with Paleo Joe. I promise you, you'll enjoy it. He's a fascinating man. And again, for anybody who wants to go fossil hunting, you need to stay tuned and you need to share this podcast with your friends. We'll be right back.
Did you know that our online store is not just about dinosaurs? We have a huge collection of modern replica skulls, including mammals, sea life, reptiles, birds, and more. And teachers, these skulls are great for the classroom. Show your students the skull of a dodo bird, great auk, or Tasmanian wolf. The majority of these skulls are cast from original specimens from the California Academy of Sciences. Go to store.dinosaurgeorge.com to see our complete line of museum-quality casts and replicas.
My interview today is with an absolute fascinating man. That's incredible. He is an author, a fossil digger, an educator, a public speaker, and the curator of three Natural History Museum exhibits. Please welcome my friend Joe Codal, otherwise known as Paleo Joe. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here.
Joe, I've got to tell you, I've spent the last couple of days preparing for the interview, and naturally I go online and research you. Did you have any idea how much you've accomplished and how busy you are?
No, really. It's just day to day. You know, I love what I do, and I just keep doing it. I do school programs, library programs. I just finished doing a seminar with Saginaw Valley State University. Gosh, it just goes on and on. And, you know, it's one of those things that people say, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. And I got to tell you guys, I never work a day in my life. It's all just a joy.
It appears that way. I've got to tell you, I was amazed at the, well, first of all, how long you've been doing this, but also your accomplishments. You know, it's a shame that this podcast isn't 4 hours long, because I'd like to go systematically through it. But I encourage absolutely everyone, you've got to go to Joe's website. It is paleojoe.com, one word, P-A-L-E-O-J-O-E, paleojoe.com. Go and click on About Joe and see what you've done. It is fascinating to me. So let's start off. Joe, tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of how you got to what you're doing now.
Wow. Well, I started collecting fossils in New York State when I was about 10 years old. I was a collector of all kinds of things. I'd go out and first of all, I love nature. You know, I'm in nature all the time, as often as I can be. But I collected bird feathers and butterflies and insects and rocks and minerals and seashells. Anything I could get my hands on, I collected. My home, at home, I had shoeboxes all over my bedroom and little museum displays, and each one of the little shoeboxes. And the thing that I found that was most exciting to me were these these weird shapes inside rocks, and I come to find out those weird shapes are called fossils. And being from New York State, I really didn't have an opportunity to think about dinosaurs or anything like that, so I just started collecting the stuff that was near me. And it's basically from that it's grown into a lifelong ambition. I've been working and studying in paleontology as often as I can. I spent 8 years in the military. I was an officer in the United States Army. Was stationed in Germany, and I could kick myself every day for not going to the Zollernhofen limestone quarries while I was there. But I did not collect or study fossils for 8 years while I was in the military. Got out and got right back into it. I worked at a science museum. I started at the low rung. I was a door greeter in the guide's reception desk. Worked my way up to education manager, and from there, the interim director of the museum. How much time do you have? From there, I went to basically, I learned all about museum exhibitry, how to build exhibits, how to bring exhibits in. As the director, I had installed many exhibits. I designed my own exhibits in the museum. And then after I left about 14 years ago, I just quit, decided to do paleontology full time. And I've designed and developed my own traveling exhibits that are touring the country right now.
God. Well, first, before I forget, Joe, thank you for your service to this country.
Oh, my God. It was my honor. It was absolutely my honor.
Well, you know, it is so refreshing to see someone who loves their country, who is willing to give time out to protect and defend and support our country. So thank you so much for doing that. And you're right. What a missed opportunity to go to Zollernhofen and go to that. Oh, man.
Well, yeah.
And who would think, after being in the service for 8 years and becoming an officer, your number one memory is what you didn't get to do in Germany.
Well, I didn't do it. Absolutely. I've been back to Europe. I've been back to Europe twice now, and I spent the time in the Czech Republic when I go back. I've got friends at the Czech National Museum, paleontologist, the director of the museum, and a number of the paleontologists there. And I have collected in the Czech Republic, but didn't do it in Germany. Ah, I could kick myself.
Well, because of how extensive your background is, I kind of want to break the interview into three segments. I'd like to start to get into a little more detail about your fossil hunting and kind of talk about some of the things you found, where you've excavated.
Wow. Well, basically, I've collected extensively in New York. Collected in the Finger Lakes region when I was little, and I put together a decent collection. I ended up donating that collection to the Shelkoff Geological Museum when I left for the military, and unfortunately that museum had closed up, sold off all of its collection. I have no idea where those things are. When I got out of the military, I started again, and I spent a great deal of time in the Hamburg area, south of Buffalo, at the Penn-Dixie Quarry, and I've collected trilobites there. I also collect in Ohio. I collect trilobites. Trilobites are actually what got me started in paleontology. I've got a collection of over 250, and that's the major exhibit that's touring right now. It's down in Kentucky. Actually, I leave in a couple days right after Thanksgiving to move it to the Shealy Museum of Natural History in North Carolina. But I digress. I also collect in the Maison Creek area, just south of Joliet, Illinois. I collect the Maison Creek Lagerstätte. I've collected in Indiana. I do fossil fish out of the Green River Formation in Wyoming, a wonderful place. If you guys can ever get out there and go to it, it's open to the public, a great place to go digging fossils. I've collected extensively in Utah for the last 8 years, dinosaurs, sauropods mostly. I discovered probably about 55% of a Camarasaurus,
wow.
And then I worked on a crew that did an Apatosaurus. I've been in Montana, working on a T-Rex rib cage. I've been in Nebraska at the Ashfall fossil beds, digging with Dr. Michael Voorhees, some of the creatures from the Ashfall fossil beds. It just goes on and on and on.
Wow, but that is so amazing. And do you find that you still get that feeling of amazement when you unearth something? You're the first human in the history of the world to see it. Now, as a kid, of course, it's fascinating. And, you know, you referenced it at the beginning, talking about, you know, that feeling of discovery. Do you, after all these years and after all of the amazing things you've been able to experience, do you still get that? Or has it just become sort of, yeah, it's another cool fossil and keep going?
No, it's a rush every day. People ask me that all the time, you know, how do you feel? What happens? And it's like, I liken it to, it's like Christmas every day. You never know what you're going to find when you break open a rock. You never know what you're going to find when you dig into the sediment. Just about 3 months ago, I was digging in Alpena, Michigan. I'm living in Michigan now. And there's a location up there that has a lot of Devonian fish. And I've never really collected Devonian fish. I've never really thought about it much. But over the last couple of years, I've been finding a lot of pieces. And 3 months ago, I found a piece that is believed to be a new species. So, yeah, I'm jumping up and down, going crazy. I think I've found one. And I've been doing some research with the University of Michigan right now. We've got a brand new paleontologist just came in from Oxford University. His field of study is the fish. And we've looked at it, and it looks good. It's not a new species, probably. I saw one in the collection down there that's extremely similar. But I'm going down just after Christmas, and I'm going to take all my tools and equipment and measurement and photographs, everything I've got to try to identify whether this is a new species or not. And back during the Devonian, the fish were placoderms. They were hard armor-plated fish. They had armor plates on the head section of the body, and that is the piece that fossilizes. And I found this beautiful piece of armor-plated fish, and it's actually, I've seen one that's similar in the museum, and mine is so much better and more complete than theirs is. So it's like Christmas every day.
Wow. Man, you know, when you think about those armored fish, it gives you a clear indication of what the environment was like during the Devonian. You know, people talk about how dangerous it would have been in the Cretaceous. They always, of course, think of Tyrannosaurus Rex. My gosh, living in the Devonian, or for that matter, look at the Miocene or the Oligocene, there weren't a lot of times that it wasn't remarkably dangerous to be alive.
Yeah, the Devonian was actually called the Age of Fish, and there was a little critter swimming around the Devonian oceans called a Dunkle Osteus. Dunkle Osteus was over 30 feet long. He was a giant fish, and he was probably the super predator of the Devonian oceans, a 30-foot-long fish.
Man. Okay, so I'm going to ask you the question that is asked. It's like asking you, who's your favorite child? What is your most memorable or favorite discovery?
Going to have to do two. I do a lot of school programs and library programs across the country. I do a lot of here in Michigan, but I've been doing programs in Arkansas, Missouri, Ohio, Utah. The question that they ask me most is that one. And the fish that I found 3 months ago is right on top of the list. But then 2 years ago, I was digging in the Silurian deposits of Middleport, New York, and I discovered two piratized Dalmanites trilobites side by side.
Oh my God.
Yeah, Dalmanites is a fairly common trilobite in that deposit. However, they were both piratized. Pyrite actually replaced the organic material of the trilobite, and these are two beautiful side-by-side Dalmanites trilobites. And actually, if you guys check out my Facebook page, I've got photographs going back, you know, several years now. And if you just go through some of my albums there, you'll see the fish that I have, and you'll also see those two Dalmanites trilobites in the posts.
And Joe, to find you on Facebook, you just look up Paleo Joe, right?
Yep, Paleo Joe. There's a couple of us out there, but you can't miss it. I'm a grizzled old man. I've got a white beard, and you can't miss me. You'll see my picture there.
Well, I got it. Now, are you able to continue? Is it a fan page where you don't have any limitations on how many people can join your page?
Yeah, I have no limitations at all.
Good. Yeah, I absolutely encourage everybody to do that. And you can go to my page, George Blassing, BLASING, and just look on my list of friends, and that's the Paleo Joe that you want to go to. But you absolutely, your Facebook page is fascinating with all the things, and that sort of leans me into my next question. Do you take the public with you when you go on some of these fossil hunting expeditions?
Yes, I do. I recently partnered with Corporate Travel Services out of Dearborn, Michigan. And we are setting up fossil education, fossil adventure tours around the country. I do that extensively here in Michigan. I do about 6 to 7 tours a year when I have the opportunity, when I have the time. And we lead groups of at least 10 to 12 families in the northern Michigan area into some really great quarries. You get to keep everything you find. Some of the other opportunities that I've had is I've actually gone on digs, and I've invited the public's different members of the public, you know, not very many, a couple families at a time to meet me where we're going to be digging. And then people will actually meet me there, and, you know, I'll take them into the locations and we'll dig, and they get to keep everything they find there as well. So I do lead fossil education, fossil adventure tours. Here in Michigan, I lead them exclusively. I'm the guide. I do everything. But if we go out of state, a lot of times they just meet me there. We show up and we dig. I do that at the Green River, and I've done that at the Maison Creek stuff just south of Joliet. But Green River is one of the ones where I just tell people, you know, if you want to dig with me, just come on, show up, and we'll go dig.
Wow. One of the biggest questions I get from the public is having young people in the family, not tiny kids, but younger kids that are just absolutely fascinated. But most of the places, the pay to dig kind of places, have pretty strict limitations, and you've got to be well up in your upper teens to be able to go. What sort of limitations do you have on any of yours?
I've got school age. If they're school age, we take them up into Alpena, Michigan area, Rockport State Park. That's a cool story all by itself. Maybe someday we'll talk about it. But it's basically school age children. I've had some parents beg to come because they had some teenagers that wanted to come, but they also had an infant. I said, well, you know, put the infant on your back, and you are 100% responsible. You know, you do what you got to do. I've had women with babies on the thing as well. Grandparents will come. The cool thing about the digs that I do, we are within, you know, a very short distance. I got to say 20, 30 feet of our cars.
Oh, wow.
I mean, if you need you need to sit in your car, turn on the air conditioner, you can go sit in the car and turn on the air conditioner. So I've had grandparents come. They go out, they stroll around a little bit, look at some of the fossils, and go back and sit in the car. So the digs are super easy. You're going to find literally thousands and thousands of fossils. They're not dinosaurs. You're not going to find dinosaurs. You're not going to find mammals. You're not going to find birds, insects. You're going to find the ancient marine creatures that crawled around the ocean floor. You'll find corals and crinoids and things like that here on my Michigan digs.
Wow. I absolutely encourage anybody who just heard that, if you've got a young person in the family who is dying to go fossil hunting, but the limitations have prevented you, or maybe you don't have access, you absolutely need to go to Paleo Joe's website. That's paleojoe.com. You need to take a look at that. And please make sure and share this podcast with all of your family and friends, because it's not just a matter of getting to go. It's getting to go with somebody who is knowledgeable, who works with kids. But that's a tough thing, Joe. You know that some people do not have the right temperament and the patience to be able to help, because every kid is so different. So the fact that you work with kids every day would make you the ideal person to lead. I cannot encourage the listeners enough to go to your site, because all that information would be there, right? Is there a way that they can follow you as well? I mean, obviously on Facebook. Is there like a newsletter or a mailing list or anything on your site that they can get on?
I wish I could do that. I do have a blog on my website on the left-hand side where I do post things from time to time. Unfortunately, the time just isn't there to sit down and write a daily blog.
Sure.
Or a newsletter. And let me go back. You were just talking about, you know, the kids and stuff. I've actually had the opportunity, the honor and privilege of taking autistic children out to dig. You know from what you do also that autistic children are just enamored by dinosaurs and paleontology, and they can spout off name after name after name of dinosaur. They know their dinosaurs very well, and I've had the opportunity to take a couple of autistic children out to the field and dig dinosaurs, or dig fossils as well, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful feeling to get them out into nature and show them that.
Oh, man. Boy, it just gets better. It just keeps getting better. That's exciting as well, because anyone with a special needs child, and certainly there's limitations. Again, like Joe said, you're very close to the road, but you know, for a child who needs accessibility to hospitals and those kind of things, those would be something you would contact Joe directly to talk about, because obviously each case is different. But how exciting that you give your time. It speaks highly of who you are, Joe, that you're willing to make arrangements to work with young people who otherwise would never get to do something like that. That's pretty impressive.
Thank you. I've got a couple of paleo clones around the country. One very quick short story. There was a young man who was 10 years old, and his family took him to one of my digs when he was 10, and he just totally enamored with fossils and paleontology. And since then, I've been in communication with him, and I've been talking with him. And as he's gotten older, I've taken him to New York to dig. I've taken him to Ohio to dig with his family, with his parents. I've taken him to Wyoming to dig, and I took him on a dinosaur dig in Utah. This young man is graduating this year and is moving on to college, and he is going to be a spectacular paleontologist. The young man is so intelligent and so dedicated. His parents were very dedicated as well. They bought him some tools and equipment. They wholeheartedly supported him in his interest in becoming a paleontologist. This kid is going to be a great paleontologist. And I've got a couple others right now, a little boy and a little girl that are, well, the little girl, she's about 13 or 14 now, who is also interested in paleontology. And with their parents, I've taken them on digs, and I've been slowly mentoring them. I don't consider myself a mentor because I don't have the time to spend with them so much, but I do take them on digs. I do communicate with them, and I do help them as I can to follow their dreams.
You know, Joe, the measure of a man is not going to be what your title was. It's not going to be how much money you made. It's not going to be the car you drive. It's going to be the lives that you touched. And just those two stories alone, if there's any definition of success, then that is what you are. Because just those two, and who knows how many countless other kids you've done the same thing for. But I just want to stand up and say, man, am I proud to know you and to see the good that happens in this country. You know, right now we're going through this turmoil of we seem to focus on the bad, and yet there are people like you out there doing what you do all the time. And it sure as heck makes the world a much better place. So thank God for people like you.
Gosh, thank you so much. That really means a lot to me. And as you know, you do this kind of work as well in schools all the time. You have a lot of opportunity to see children over time grow up and people recognize you, and it happens all the time. I took a group of students. This is a funny thing. We'll probably talk about this later, but I also write children's books. Well, when the books first came out in 2005, we did a statewide contest for a reading contest where the classroom who reads the most over a certain period of time, they would win a dinosaur dig trip with me to Wyoming, to the Wyoming Dinosaur Center. And a school in Wayland, Michigan won that trip. It was a group of sixth graders. And we took them on a cross-country bus tour to Wyoming. We dug dinosaurs. We were in the prep lab. We did the work. They were sixth graders, so we actually did work in the prep lab and the casting lab. Then we drove back home. Last year, I was driving, and this was a couple years ago. Last year, I was driving through Wayland again. I stopped at a McDonald's to get some lunch as I was passing through town, and the kid in the window says, "You're Paleo Joe." I said, "Yeah." He says, "You took me on a dinosaur trip when I was in sixth grade." Those are the kind of things that really make me feel like I am doing something. It's just great. A couple days ago, I was going down to Port Huron, Michigan, to do a program at the museum there called Dinosaur CSI. I was doing a program there, and I stop at a Speedway gas station. I'm tanking up, and the guy looks at me and says, "You're Paleo Joe. I've heard a lot about you." So those kind of things, you know, really, really make me feel good.
Man,
I'm doing something.
That's exactly right. Well, let's talk a little bit now about your public speaking. You're available for hire for schools and museums and libraries and that sort of stuff. What grade levels do you have a preference in, the grade or the age groups that you speak to?
No preference whatsoever. I tailor my programs to the grade level. I do what I call Dinosaur Day with Paleo Joe, and that's mostly for the school-age children, K through 6 or 7. I've actually done a Montessori group where I sit in a circle with the children, and these kids are pre-Ks, and basically toddlers and things like that, and I actually hold the fossils and I pass them around the circle, and we do that kind of stuff. I don't do that very often. That's really, really time-consuming. Yeah. And hard. but I do a lot of K through sixes. I also do teen programs I call Dinosaur CSI, where I talk about the things we know about dinosaurs by the evidence we find in the ground. I also do an adult program that mirrors that, where I go into a lot more detail, the histology, the bones, and you know what we know about these creatures by the scientific evidence that we're discovering. And I've also done senior centers. I do programs for seniors that really enjoy dinosaurs and paleontology. So really, I do span all levels. I've done some college seminars fairly recently. I'm scheduled to do another one at the University of Michigan. I've got another one at the Michigan State University and another one over at Muskegon Community College. So I do college-level programs as well, and usually those are called Dinosaur CSI. People really love to hear about, you know, what these creatures were like and the science behind what we know that.
I've got to share a story with you. When you mentioned speaking at a senior center, I remember one morning I spoke at a daycare to infants, little tiny babies. Why they brought me in, I don't know, but I spoke to them in the morning, and then at 1 o'clock, I spoke at a retirement community, and I was talking to my mom about it. She said, how did it go? I said, this is the first time in my life that both audiences fell asleep and were all wearing diapers.
That's fantastic. That is fantastic. I feel the same way. That is fantastic.
Yeah, it's the first time I've ever seen an entire audience in both shows sleeping. They both
sleeping.
Completely fell asleep. So,
I love it. I love
that's
it.
That's too crazy. So let me ask you, for people who might be interested in having you come speak, is all that contact information done through your website or Facebook or both?
It's done through the website, or they can just email me directly, paleojoe@charter.net. They can just do it right through the email, and I'll get right back to them as quick as I can, and we can discuss it and see what we can do.
Right. So your email is paleojoe@charter.net, and then the yep. website is paleojoe.com. So you touched a minute ago on the fact that you're an author. I guess you were bored one day and had nothing better to do, so you decided to write a book. You need to find a hobby, Joe.
I know. Well, the funny thing is I never designed my life to be an author, but a book publisher here in Michigan heard about me, and he contacted me and says, hey, why don't you write some kids' books? I see what you do with kids. Why don't you write some books? And I decided, hey, you know, that's a cool idea. We'll go ahead and do that. So that's how I got hooked into being a book author.
So how many books do you have now, out now?
There are 6 children's books out, 2 adult books, and that's it right now. The 6 children books, I've got 5 chapter books. They're dinosaur mystery and adventure books. It's called Paleo Joe's Dinosaur Detective Club. And I've got 2 kids that kind of follow me around, and we solve mysteries. Each book's a different prehistoric creature, different mystery or adventure. I also have another book that just went out of print. You can still get it on Amazon. It's called Hidden Dinosaurs, and that's a dinosaur seek and find book. It's a picture book where, you know, you read a little poetic story or, you know, some lines, and then on that page you'll be able to find different things, different dinosaurs and tools and equipment hidden on those pages. One of the adult books that I wrote was called The Complete Guide to Michigan Fossils. Basically, you know, my home here in Michigan, I wanted people to be able to go out and find fossils. So it's kind of like a field trip guidebook showing people what the fossils are here in the state. And then the other one is called A Pictorial Guide to North American Trilobites. That one is also out of print right now. I'm actually working on the second edition that actually describes the trilobites we find here in North America. The problem when you find a book about fossils or trilobites or whatever, they cover them from all over the world. This book, Pictorial Guide to North American Trilobites, will actually give you an idea of what you can find right here in North America as you travel across the country.
See, what a great point to make. I remember as a kid getting books about fossils, and they're showing things from China and Africa, which was fascinating, but it almost made me feel like, well, what's the use? Because that's where those things are being found. What a great point to make it, if you live here, here's what you can find here. And that's really neat. So can they purchase books? Like, do you have a catalog on your website, or how can people purchase your books?
They can go to my website, and there's a Paleo Joe store there, and they can actually order the books through the Paleo Joe store. Or again, they can contact me by email, and I'll be happy to, you know, autograph them, personalize them for them, and send them books along that way. Yeah, that's pretty much the way they can do them. They can go to Barnes & Noble Amazon, I guess, has them too. But they can get them right from Barnes & Noble as well. They're usually on their shelves.
So with the holidays coming up, you had just briefly touched on autographing them. Is that something you could do if they go through your website?
Oh, sure, yeah. If they go through the website, there's a comment section after they've ordered the books. There's a comment section there. They can say, would you autograph it to, you know, Charlie, and, you know, things like that, and I'll be happy to do that and send them on their way.
Wow. So everybody make a point of that. You know, when you're giving a gift to a young person, to get the author's signature is always something that kids are looking to do, because they it's like trading cards. They love collecting anything. And the fact that you know, they may not see you live, but can still get your autograph, that's really neat. And again, everyone, that website is paleojoe.com, and then look for the Paleo Joe store and go on there. So,
funny thing you said, trading cards. When I was a director of the museum, actually even before I became the director, we had a couple of exhibits come in, and I did an exhibit on fossils there, and we created trading cards. We created 16 different cards. And the kids could come in once a week and find the security guard and get a trading card. Every week was a different card. At the end of the 16 weeks, they could come back and they could trade the cards back and forth. And if they got a complete set, they won a prize. This got the kids to come into a museum 16 times to, you know, to find the security guard, which meant they have to go through the exhibits and, you know, maybe pass something they'd never seen before to get this one trading card. And I did that twice.
Oh, what a great concept. Man, for anybody that's out there that's curator of a museum, especially like some of the smaller communities are always looking for things to do to motivate people to come back. And what a great concept. I'll tell you something I saw once that I thought was fascinating. It's that museum at Thanksgiving Point, the Natural History Museum there in Utah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They hid little gremlins, little statues of elves. I think there's 15 of them hidden in the museum. And they don't say anything about it. They don't promote it. But if somebody spots one, then the docents there will tell you, yes, there's 14 more. And oh my gosh, kids go nuts going back into that museum to find those things.
Isn't that wonderful? And that's a great way, again, to get kids to be energized and actually pay attention to detail. Today, you know, I don't think kids pay attention to a lot of details anymore, you know. I still, in the mornings when I get up really early, I stand outside and I look up at the stars. How often do you look at the stars?
Right.
There's so much in the world around you. You just got to take it all in.
You know, when you first were talking about, as a child, the things you used to do, and I understand we live in a different world than when you and I grew up, but for us weekends, Saturday mornings, you were out of the house at daylight. You didn't come home. You came home at lunch to eat.
Yeah.
And then you came home at dark. And you know, I'm sure you and I live parallel lives where you're turning over rocks to look what's underneath, or you're catching frogs at a pond, or you're watching a snake catch a frog, and those kind of things. Unfortunately, so many kids don't get to experience that, and I just got to wonder if that doesn't hurt development of a young person.
I agree wholeheartedly with you. I think it might. I mean, well, gosh, how can I explain it any better than that? You did a perfect job explaining it. That's exactly how I feel.
Yeah. So now let's talk about these museum exhibits, because clearly you were bored one afternoon with nothing to do. So you came up with this concept. First of all, how did you assemble the exhibits, or tell us about the exhibits and how you assembled them?
Well, first of all, I've collected a lot of fossils over my lifetime, and my wife finally said, either the fossils have got to go or I'm leaving. So that's when I decided to build these exhibits.
So do you still talk to her at all? Did you ever see her?
we do communicate once in a while, yeah.
You send a check once a month and everything's fine.
Yeah, and it's fine. Yeah, she's happy. She runs to the bank. You say that, and it's true. I come home from a trip. I give her the checks, and she deposits them.
You know,
I don't know what else. Yeah.
It's like being divorced.
It is. It really is. Anyway, we're having a good time here. Anyway, I collected so many fossils over so long, and I've always, like I said, when I was a child, I had these little shoeboxes around my room. I've always been fascinated by museums. I've always wanted to work in a museum. And as a child, I had all these goals and objectives, and one was I wanted to collect fossils. One was I wanted to dig dinosaurs. One, I wanted to work in a museum, you know, and all those dreams, all those aspirations have come true. So once I got to work in the museum as the director, I learned about museum exhibitry. I learned how to put these things together. We brought some exhibits here from the American Museum of Natural History, from the Boston Museum of Science, and it took 16 men and a horse to put it together. So I designed exhibits that one person can set it up and one person can take it down and make it really simple. I've contacted a local cabinet maker. He was a retired cabinet maker. He had not much to do in the evenings. So he actually built beautiful display cases for me with acrylic tops. Because of my knowledge about museums and museum exhibitry, I created all these text panels and display units, and I went to a local print company, and we worked together and developed all these wonderful graphics. And over time, I built up that trilobite exhibit to now it's a national touring exhibit all over the country. It's got audio visuals, it's got sound, it's got it's a multimedia event. After that, I said, okay, what's next? I got to do something else, and I had all these fossils from Michigan. So I thought, man, you know, wouldn't it be great to show this exhibit to small museums, little county museums, and show the people in the state of Michigan what kind of fossils can be found here. And basically that will fit for anybody who's had the Devonian period in their state. So Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, New York, they can also get this exhibit, fossils of the Devonian. And I put that out on the road, and that's currently touring. And then, you know, I did dig some dinosaurs out west, and I've been working with Greg Olson, who owns Dinosaurs and More, something like that. He digs on private property, and he gets a lot of dinosaur bones, and I've been purchasing a lot from him just to clean and prep, and there's another story there. But I had all these dinosaur bones, and I said, well, let me put together a dinosaur prep lab exhibit where I can set up a prep lab in a museum and visit that museum once or twice a month and actually do fossil prep right there in front of the public. But there's no glass between me and them. You go to the field museum and there's a big piece of glass there. You can't talk to the paleontologists. There is no glass between me and the public. I can talk to them and tell them what we're doing, how we're doing it, why we're doing it. So I just decided to get those exhibits out on the road. They're very important to me because they do engage the public, and that's the one thing I want to do, educate and engage and entertain.
You know, you touched on entertaining. I think old style museums are beginning to fail because they don't understand the need to entertain as much as educate. You know, when we were kids, we would walk into the museum, everybody would fall single file, read every single sign.
Yep.
And now if it isn't flashing or if it's not moving, people will blow right past it.
Yeah.
You know, we put together this traveling museum. Now ours is replicas. We can't travel with authentics, but we go from school to school. And the very first time we set up, I expected that the kids would come in and be so, there's 140 pieces in there. And I thought, well, they won't have enough time to see everything. And what happened is one or two read some things and the other ones, after there was nothing to do, just stood around and talked. And so I had to come up with a scavenger hunt as a way to keep them occupied, and then they love it because it forces them to go in and look. But I don't, when I was a kid, I mean, certainly, you know, we weren't all perfect students. We, you know, we ran around, but I know I read everything I saw, and that's not the case. So the fact that you recognize that you include entertainment into your exhibits is probably why they're so popular. So On your site or on your Facebook page, you would be posting where they're going and where they've been and all that stuff?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I just posted one today because yesterday I was in the Bay County Historical Museum installing my dinosaur bones. So yesterday and today I've been posting pictures of the exhibit going in, and that exhibit actually opens on the 5th of December. My trilobite exhibit strikes on the 27th of November and opens at the Shealy Museum of Natural History in North Carolina on December 3rd. So yeah, all that stuff gets posted on my Facebook page. You know, as you mentioned that blog thing, I probably should start updating my blog on my website. It's very easy to do, and it really doesn't take that much time. That way people can actually see what's going on there as well.
I wonder if there's a young volunteer out there who, you know, somebody that might could do that and sort of be your semi-PR person. I'm sure you're like me, though. You're very concerned about how you're portrayed and you know, because when we're dealing with kids, it's very important that you don't, you know, that you say the right things. But I can imagine just looking at your schedule, how you would have time to do that. But I assure you, there are going to be so many people that are just going to be amazed at everything you're doing. You know, one of the thing when you're just talking about setting up your dinosaur exhibit, I've decided if I ever do another traveling exhibit, it's either going to be butterflies or leaves.
Yeah, because butterflies. Yeah, it's got to be something simple. It doesn't weigh so much, you know. I can imagine schlepping around that giant T-Rex skull, you know. How many hours does it take you to set that thing up? You show up the day before, you set it up and leave it there for a day. And
we do.
A few days to school, doesn't it?
Yeah, it takes us about 4 hours to set up. We've got three of us, but we've got it down to such a science. It's like your stuff, you know. It all gets packed a certain way. But every time I pick up that upper part of that T-Rex skull to put on that stand, I always say, my God. These dinosaurs are
doing?
Well, dinosaurs are great, but why do they have to be big?
Exactly.
So yeah, we're going to do a butterfly exhibit next. That's
perfect. They're much more colorful too.
Absolutely right. You know, this dead stuff after a while, you know, you get to use a lot of imagination.
Yeah.
Joe,
one thing you said, go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
Well, the one thing you said about the museum thing, one of the things I learned is that there are three types of people that visit a museum. There's the ones that go in and they look at the object and they want to know what it is. And then there's the person who looks at it and wants to know a little bit more about it. Then there's the one who wants the details. And so we actually, when we do museum exhibits, we do three different type styles, three different sizes of fonts. The big one that says, this is A. Then the one, you know, then you write a paragraph, this is A, whatever, and then this is what it does, this is what it ate, this is this. And then you go to the bottom one, it's a lot smaller type style, that's where you put in a lot of the details. And I've seen people in museums, you know, walk by and do the quick one, but I've seen people stand in front of an exhibit reading every single word on that text panel, and that's just one of the ways that we know that we can judge how well we're doing is, you know, there are the three different types of people, the ones that rip through it, ones that kind of look at it and think about it, and then the ones who stand in front of that exhibit for 5-10 minutes studying it and learning all about everything they can about it.
Well, isn't that rewarding though when you see that person that reads every single line and you see their mind is just like yours when you designed it, you're excited about what you're doing. That's the best. I enjoy that. See, we also do some cities like chambers of commerce will hire us to come in. And so we get to see the public as well. Now, obviously kids love it, but we get to see the public. And it is interesting how some people will blow past it 85 miles an hour, go through as if they're in a race and go out the door and not say a word. And then you have the parent that stands there and reads line for line to their child. And it's just so rewarding to see that. It's the best. Well, Joe, I got to tell you, I have had more fun speaking with you, and you know, I would love to do a follow up with you if you ever have time. Obviously, you've got so much time to kill; you're probably bored anyway.
But, yeah,
but my feet
are up on the windowsill right now. I'm petting my cat. So
yeah, exactly. Well, I would love the chance to do a follow up and talk about more about what's going on and maybe coming out of the digging season next year or going into it. You know, it would be kind of fun is if maybe we could figure out. I've got a handheld digital recorder that I'd love to mail you. And when you go out and dig, maybe just you record a couple of field notes and send them back, and then we'll put them in a podcast and kind of have a actual you from the field describing what's going on, who's finding what. I don't know if you've got the interest in that, but I would, boy, that would be so much fun for.
I sure do. Yeah.
That would be a blast. Yeah.
Actually, I've got a mini, nowadays, I mean, with cell phones, I keep telling people it's a joke that, you know, I'm not technically proficient. I dig in the dirt. So when you give me something electronic, it's got to be really simple. My cell phone now takes wonderful movies. Wonderful photographs, records wonderfully. I take my cell phone with me wherever I go. What a great idea. Next year, I promise you, I will take some video footage and I will do, I will send it to you. You can put it up on your podcast. And actually, on my website, if you go down to the bottom left-hand corner, there's a YouTube link down there. And if you click on my name, Joseph Kodal, it will take you to my YouTube page. And I've got a bunch of YouTube videos there that people can watch.
Ooh, now that's kind of cool. That's really neat.
And the last one is really neat. It's only about a minute or so long, or a couple minutes long, and it's actually me in my prep lab cleaning a Green River fish with a little mini jackhammer, a micro jack.
Oh, man. Oh, how great would that be to...
But I promise you, we will stay in touch, and I will get you some of these broadcasts or some of these little clips, and I'll send them down to you.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We definitely would love to, because I know a lot of the listeners are going to absolutely want to know what's going on with you. So, everybody out there, make sure to go to paleojoe.com, PaleoJoe.com, and you learn about what this man is doing, what he's accomplished, the lives he's touching. I've got to tell you something. Like I said, you have clearly dedicated your life to teaching people about prehistoric life, and the fact that you're sharing your collection with people. Joe is an author, a public speaker, a fossil hunter, and a darn good man. His website, again, is paleojoe.com. Joe, thank you so much for taking time out and sharing your life with all of us.
It was absolutely my pleasure, George. I've been following you for a couple of years now. You are doing a great job as well. I wish we were a little bit closer together, but then you'd take business away from me, and I would take business away from you. So maybe it's better that we're across the country from each other. But thank you so much. I really do appreciate it. It is my honor to do what I do, and thank you for the opportunity to talk about it.
You bet. Thanks, Joe.
Okay, take care.
All right, let's answer a couple of questions from people that have written in or called in. This first one is Elizabeth in Talmadge, Ohio. Elizabeth says, I have been interested in paleontology since the age of 4, and now I'm 24 years old. I've always wanted to get involved with professionals in the field. However, I'm in a wheelchair. Is this possible for me to do? Well, hey there, Elizabeth. It's nice to hear from you. It's my mother's name. There's a couple of things. First of all, it depends on how mobile you are, Elizabeth. If you have the ability to, let's say, move your upper body, you know, and you can manipulate tools and that kind of stuff, well, then certainly, you know, there are wheelchairs that are designed to go outdoors, you know, that you could travel across some of the more rough terrain. And of course, with the assistance of other people there, you know, if you had the ability, let's say, to get out of the wheelchair and work at ground level, where, of course, everybody else is, then you would have the ability to help unearth some of the specimens. You know, you could clean away the dirt. When you're working in the field, Elizabeth, you're not working, you know, super close to the bone. You're getting close. But that kind of work could very easily be done if you want to get out in the field, if you actually want to work in the field. There's other things, of course. There is volunteering at museums, which is a great way to get involved in, you know, with your love of paleontology, to act as a docent, to teach younger people about dinosaurs and about what they do. I'll tell you, I have one of my employees is in a wheelchair, and it's Joseph. Now, Joseph doesn't have a lot of ability to communicate as well, but what we do with Joseph is he gets to have touch pieces, and kids get to come up and he gets to tell them what they are and that sort of stuff. And so there's all kinds of opportunities in the industry. Again, if you like the idea of field work, and something else to keep in mind as well, Elizabeth, that's not going into the field, but still doing that exciting part, and that's the prep work, you know, to be able to start working on fossils. I'm not familiar with any museums there in your part of the state of Ohio that I can think of off the top of my head. But, you know, there's a lot of museums that have those laboratories where people can sit down behind a table and they work on fossils and the public gets to walk by. Well, hey, there's absolutely nothing wrong with having a workbench that is at the right height for you to be able to get it there and do that. So either look into some of these, outdoor type wheelchairs. Finally, let me tell you this. I don't know why this didn't dawn on me. If you listen to this episode, you're going to hear Paleo Joe talk about how he goes out of his way to assist people that get to go out and work in the field. Now, it wouldn't be a job, but you would get the opportunity, if you could work something out with Paleo Joe, get the opportunity to get out there and maybe do a little digging and find out if it's really what you want. You know, it could be, if you've not had a chance to go in the field, it could be that you may find what a lot of people find, and that is, man, this is a little nuts out here. I need to get closer to dinosaurs, but inside of an air-conditioned room. So anyway, Elizabeth, stay in touch. Let me know if you find anything. And if you do contact Paleo Joe, tell him I said hi. All right, let's jump over. Let's see. This is Patrick from Abu Dubai. How do paleontologists determine the color of different dinosaurs? Well, you know, Patrick, a lot of color is based on guesses. And you'll find that a lot of paleontologists or paleo artists use modern animals as sort of the counterpart. But there have been discoveries now where people can actually understand the color of a dinosaur. If you'll go to my podcast page, it's dinosaurgeorgepodcast.com. And if you will click on episode number 105.2, that podcast was dedicated to new technology that helped paleontologists actually determine the color and shading of a dinosaur. It is fascinating. So make sure and listen to that, Patrick. And thank you so much for taking the time to write. All right, we can do one more. Let's see. Let me jump through my computer. This is John from Land O'Lakes, Florida. Hey, DG, I was wondering if there's any evidence of large theropods in the Jurassic, like Allosaurus with feathers. And also one more thing. Do you have any information on Pelagornis? Thanks. Well, first, let me tell you about Pelagornis, man. That is a huge bird. And everything I understand, it is the largest flying bird that ever existed. Now, I have a small model of a Pelagornis skull that is in my traveling museum. I say small. I mean, it's a good probably 2.5 feet long. It is the coolest looking thing in the world because rather than having teeth, it has jaws that are shaped like teeth, and that is just so cool, man. It looks like such a wicked animal. It's probably harmless to you and I would hope, but it's so cool. So just with Pelagornis, I find that fascinating. Now to your question about did any of the theropods like Allosaurus from the Jurassic had feathers? To my knowledge, John, I am unaware of any evidence that proves that they did. I don't know of any. Now, I could be totally wrong. There is a lot of evidence that some of the Cretaceous theropods had them. I mean, more and more. Every time you turn around, there's a new discovery. But the time that separates the Jurassic from the Cretaceous is enormous. And so sometimes maybe the evidence that we can see in the Cretaceous has been lost in animals that date back to the Jurassic. But you always have to look at Archaeopteryx. I mean, here's a Jurassic animal that clearly is a dinosaur, that clearly has feathers. And if they were that well evolved on Archaeopteryx, then I suspect that the bigger theropods had them as well, because they all came from that same, you know, family grouping. So my best guess, John, is that they did. All right, you guys, I hope you enjoyed this podcast. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Paleo Joe. Please make sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. You'll see links on my podcast page. It's dinosaurgeorgepodcast.com. While you're there, click on my catalog, store.dinosaurgeorge.com. I hope you find something that you like. And of course, check out our website at dinosaurgeorge.com. Until next time, everybody, take care of yourselves. Take care of the people around you. Be kind to each other, because man, does it make the world a much better place. See ya.
Thank you for listening to the Dinosaur George Show. Please follow us on our social media links and join our mailing list. If you're interested in having Dinosaur George speak at your event, please visit our website at dinosaurgeorge.com. Until next time, keep digging for clues about the past.